Mike here. This episode of The B-Roll is an old retro review show that I had recorded last summer with my friend and fellow GVN cast member Hef. And we had recorded it at her place, which at the time I didn't realize quite how much of an echo there was. And of course, we don't actually have microphones, so I apologize for the sound quality now. The second thing with this episode is that with this, I need help from you guys. I'm actually using this footage to audition a potential new editor for the show. Essentially, I'm hoping that this person can come in and take over the editing work, which would basically really take a load off of my plate. Now, what I need from you, quite simply, is feedback. I'd like to get your thoughts on style, formatting of this episode. What do you think of the editing? So, with that, enjoy! Alright, what's up, Internet? Mike here with our latest Real Geeks flashback as our slow, inexorable crawl out of the 90s continues.
Why would you ever want to leave the 90s?
Well, consider we're gonna eventually be going into the 80s, it's just downhill from here.
Oh, we're going backwards, okay.
Because we're going to 1992, the year we still thought pastels were a good color for clothing, and we honestly thought Luke Perry could play a teenager at 26. And we'll be discussing, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Not that one. The original film starring Christy Swanson as the Chosen One. Now, odds are, at this point, you know the story. And let's be honest, really, if you don't, what rock have you been living under? But just to be safe, this is basically your standard. There's a chosen one, one girl in a generation who can make the difference against the coming tide of darkness, who's chosen to kill the vampires, blah, 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 blah. And for this, as you've noticed, they finally allowed me to actually have a guest. As I am joined by Geeksploitation's tactical nuke of cuteness, the Mighty
Hex. Oh, I love that description.
I've been sitting on that introduction for 3 weeks.
I want to make it my Twitter bio.
So, now, I have, of course, seen this version of Buffy more or less when it first came out.
I was 5.
Needless to say, I was not. And also, one of us is sitting on a phone book, 2 hardcovers, and it's not me.
No, I don't think it is you. That's why how you're so tall.
So, anywho, now, Hef, you on the other hand, came into the Buffy fandom through the TV show first. Mm-hmm. So between that and the fact that you put far more preparation into this than I ever do, I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on this version of Buffy.
I loved it.
Could we elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to go first.
One of us has notes.
Okay, so I was thinking about it, about the fact that I was 5 when Buffy came, when the movie came out in 92. And I didn't, you know, watch it then because I was 5 and, you know, had other things going on. So I thought about it and it was really cool because I was so young when the movie came out, and then I was 10 when the series came out, that I almost always lived in a world like post-Buffy, and that made me happy to have that kind of influence in the world that I was growing up in. So thanks, Buffy, for letting me become a rabid feminist. So I thought it was a mix between Mean Girls, Clueless, and Crybaby.
Now, normally I'm going to stop you right there for one reason. This is often described as Clueless with vampires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the thing. Buffy came first.
Yeah.
Clueless literally lifted the entire formula of this version of Buffy with the sole exception of the supernatural elements.
Yes, that's true. Well, Clueless is also Jane Austen's Emma, but watching it now, after seeing these other, you know, parts of the pop culture, like, pantheon, or however you say it, I love those three movies that I mentioned, Crybaby, Mean Girls, and Clueless, and so that kind of, like, colored my viewing of this, and I very much enjoyed it. Although, because Crybaby is a musical, and I recently, like, become very obsessed with the Buffy musical, the only thing that could make this movie better is if it was a musical. Because it was campy, it was kitschy, it was 90s, it had like the feel of like some 50s elements in it too, like the way Crybaby did, and if it was a musical, it would just be like, I don't think I'd ever watch anything else. I would just watch the Buffy movie over and over again. So I thought that it was really good, and I really liked that they started out as the girls that kind of like talk like Mean Girls, like, oh my god. Because I always thought Buffy was a weird name, and I realize now that Buffy is named Buffy because she can say it like this, Buffy.
I could see that.
Yeah, so someone asks her name in the movie, and she's like, Buffy, before she's, you know, knows that she's the chosen one when she's still kind of like a mean girl. And I was like, okay, now know why Buffy is named Buffy. It's because she can say it that way, and it's hilarious. And now I just want to go around telling everyone my name is Buffy. But anyway, I liked it because Buffy is an inspiration to so many women because she keeps her femininity, but also has her strength. And they show that really clearly in the movie when she has the, towards the end, she, you know, keeps saying throughout the movie, she has keen fashion sense, and that's what puts her apart from maybe the other Slayers or the other girls. And then at the end, she finally, like, flamethrows a vampire, the main bad guy, with a can of hairspray. And, or no, it's perfume. It's perfume. And basically uses that as a flame torch sort of thing. And that was just like the best moment ever. And it made me think, you know, like, you know, years before Legally Blonde came out, that movie was, you know, another strong woman who used her femininity to save the day and can prove that femininity can be strong, can be smart. Buffy did that first. And that makes me so happy. Keeping your femininity and showing strength. And Buffy is an inspiration because, you know, once you have a little bit of strength, a little bit of confidence, and a little bit of purpose, you can be this, like, amazing, powerful, badass lady who still has a keen fashion sense, who is still girly, and is still feared, and still, you know, not seen as less strong because she's feminine. And I love that. I love that so much. I think one of the reasons why women like Buffy so much, and want to be like Buffy so much, is that she can walk alone at night and not be afraid. That is the dream.
Yeah.
That is the dream of every woman ever. And I'm just watching this, I'm like, man, Buffy's out at like all hours of night and she's not scared at all. Nothing ever, like, you know, bad happens. That's why women want to be Buffy. They want to walk alone at night and they want to make flamethrowers out of perfume.
Now, y'all, I'm probably going to get staked before the end of this review because she loved this version of Buffy.
Oh, you don't like it?
I am more or less with Joss Whedon himself, who is, shall we say, rather unhappy with the film. And no, I say this in all seriousness because apparently this suffered from so many rewrites and was pulled so far from his original vision that while he is still credited as the screenwriter, he literally just got fed up, walked off the set one day, and never went back.
Is that why he decided to do the show later on to retell the story properly?
Actually, in part, because as I understand it, if you look for a comic called Buffy the Origin, that's the version of this that Whedon wanted to do.
Right, and that, I've read that. That has a lot of similarities to this. Like, they still do the flamethrower thing in it. There's still, like, the dude, that, bad dude that she falls in love with or whatever and runs off with at the end. The only thing, really, that I saw a big difference from the origin comic and the movie is that she didn't burn school down. So is that what Joss Whedon wanted? Just, like, pure arson?
Yeah, he originally had her burning the school down. Merrick, who is basically early 90s Giles.
Yeah, no. Gotta stop you there, because Giles is charming. Giles is attractive. Giles is everything you ever want in a man for any purpose, watcher, daddy, boyfriend, lover, whatever. I love Giles, and Merrick was creepy. He looked like a cross between, he looked like a cross between Freddy Krueger. I almost said Freddie Mercury. No, Freddy Krueger and Indiana Jones, and he was creeping around in a locker room and like preying on a teenage girl. Giles is a gentleman. Giles is charming.
Oh yeah. Oh no.
Merrick is not Giles. So take that out of your mouth right now. Giles is perfect.
I agree with everything you just said. However, Merrick does occupy the Giles role in this version. Yes. Let's not kid ourselves.
No, the Watcher role, not the Giles role.
He's the Giles analog. Not the same character in any way, shape, or form. But
he's Giles before Giles.
For the sake of people watching, he's the equivalent.
I hated the Watcher.
Oh, and rightfully so. You are absolutely right.
He's awful.
He's creepy as hell, but he's actually not my main problem with the film.
He never changed his outfit.
Also true. I don't know the relevance, but also true. Because
what did they say through the whole movie? The whole power and strength and makes Buffy difference and makes Buffy stand apart. A key fashion sense. He looked like Freddy Krueger and Indiana Jones, and he never changed once, and he must be stinky.
He is every 90s mentor character ever conceived.
He's the worst. I hate him.
You're kind of, I think, supposed to.
Okay, but... So that's one improvement that the show did make, is Giles.
Joss Whedon's version works a lot better because the problems here lie with Fran and Kaz Kazooie. The people who... Yeah, you can make all the jokes about the name right now. I will wait.
I wish my name was Kaz Kazooie. Banjo-Kazooie.
But these are basically the people who have the cinematic rights to Buffy.
Okay.
And pretty much took this movie away from Joss.
Oh.
Because
I don't really like Joss Whedon.
Oh, no. That's fair. And we're going to leave that to another video. They're basically the reason he left the film.
How could you ever hate someone named Kaz Kazooie?
Apparently it can be done. But he left, and as much as he does have, like I said, he does have the screenwriter's credit, he'll be the first to tell you that this film is not part of Buffy canon, and he doesn't want it to be considered Buffy canon, which makes the fact that there is a season 8 comic that has Pike come back in it.
So,
makes that a little odd.
Yeah.
But, again, I don't blame him. It doesn't know if it wants to be a horror comedy.
Yep.
Or a straight-up, cliched vampire horror film.
And I didn't know what it was going in.
Yeah.
I knew that it was from the 90s, and I knew that it was going to be bad, but I didn't know if it was, like, supposed to be serious. I quickly realized it was not supposed to be serious. But at the start, I was like, okay, well, what is this? It's kitschy, but is it meant to be kitschy? Is it, like, meant to, you know, be a serious part of the Buffy canon or what? And very clearly, if you watch this movie, you realize that it is not. And I kind of knew it wasn't part of the Buffy canon when the school didn't burn down. I said, okay, this is not Buffy's origin story.
As long as we're going to talk kitsch, camp, unneeded comedy and so forth.
All of my favorite things.
Rutger Hauer. Dude. I have the fondest memories of you in Blade Runner. Your like tears in the rain monologue. That was utterly improvised. was just a cinematic masterpiece. It's some of the most brilliant acting I have ever seen. And I love you for it. And then I saw you in Buffy. And I weeped for the state of your 90s career. Because this is, off camera, this is possibly the sweetest man you could possibly meet.
Aww.
And the things they made that man say and do. I feel so bad for him!
Was he like the older main vampire guy?
He was Lothos.
Right.
For those of you who have only seen the show, he's He's the equivalent of the master. Mm. He performs brilliantly, but I don't think they knew what they wanted him to do.
No, I hated all of the vampires.
Lothos, in particular, is stereotypical 70s camp,
yep.
camp vampire villain in one scene. And then he's dark, brooding, interview with the vampire-ish, mm-hmm.
yep.
like two scenes later. And then he goes back to camp.
Yep.
And Mr. Hauer, sir, again, I have the utmost respect for you, but at that point in time, I'm pretty sure you were still allowed to say no.
Yeah, but don't you think it was fun being on the set of that movie? Like, it had to have been so fun.
Unless you had to deal with Donald Sutherland.
Oh.
Because as I understand it from the IMDb trivia, Joss Whedon was ready to kill him.
Oh, God.
He was an absolute prima donna dick behind the scenes.
Yikes.
Yeah, if you watched this and you hated him, I don't blame you.
Because he's not Giles.
We have to, at some point here, hit Christy Swanson's performance as Buffy. Now, on the one hand, Sarah Michelle Gellar, she is not. That said, this was still very early in her career, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think this was her first role as the female lead. And she's clearly putting the work in. She's clearly trying. She's working her ass off. She has obviously trained. And whilst on the one hand, Gellar did the better job with Buffy, I have the utmost respect for the effort that Swanson has put in, because she has clearly done the best with what she had. What she had just wasn't necessarily a whole lot.
But the best wardrobe ever. Like, I wrote down in my notes. Summary: I want to be Buffy and have all her clothes.
Look, Perry.
He's the guy on Riverdale right now,
yep.
right? Okay. Another thing about this being a 90s movie. You know that you've aged out of your 20s, like I recently have, when Luke Perry was like hot in the 90s, and now he's hot dad, and you like him on Riverdale more than you like everyone else. And now I'm talking about Riverdale instead of Buffy. But I got distracted by hot dad.
As much as Luke Perry playing a teenager straight up does not work, it may also at the same time be one of the most glorious running gags the 90s ever gave us. Before we consider wrapping up, we have to cover Paul Reubens.
Okay, this is going to sound really ridiculous, but I knew that Paul Reubens was in the movie, and then I'm watching him like, who is he? Who is he? And then I didn't realize till the end that he was the horrible goatee vampire.
Yeah.
And I was like, I did not realize that was him. And I don't know if that was intentional or I'm just like completely oblivious and distracted by all the 90s fashion, but I did not realize that was him.
Well, I think a lot of that is the simple, this was just, I believe, just after Pee-wee Herman. Like, probably like 5 years after, like close enough that if he doesn't do some serious wardrobe and makeup work,
then he'll just be Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, you're just gonna see Pee-wee Herman at Hemery High School. His death scene. is basically the blessing and the curse of this movie.
Yeah, it was the kind of joke that is funny, and then it's not, but then it comes around again.
Like, it's not only brilliant, and Mr. Reubens, sir, I tip my hat to you for the simple fact that that was also entirely improvised.
Oh, was it?
That was all him.
I would probably do the same thing.
And I feel like he looked at the script and just went, fuck it, I'm just gonna have some fun. it also really hurts the film because I think for a lot of people who have seen it, that scene is about the only thing that this movie is remembered for.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's probably one of the most famous moments. Now, that said, one of the things I'm notorious for in some of our main reviews is randomly connecting the movie I have watched to other films. And if you pay close attention to the basketball game scene toward the end of the film, you will find out where Batman went to high school.
Oh.
Because there's a point where a student who was turned into a vampire very early in the film forgets him for about the middle third of the movie completely, and then he shows up as one of the basketball players, and there's a moment where a player on the opposing team has the ball, stops in front of him, and is, of course, becomes understandably scared and is just like, here, you take the ball, just hand it to him. That is a young Ben Affleck.
What?
That is a young Ben Affleck.
I need to watch that again.
That's one of his earliest film appearances. And there, one of Buffy's friends, who, aside from Affleck, is probably one of the only actors to have their career survive this film for an extensive period of time.
Hilary Swank. I was really excited when she was in it.
That was her first on-screen role.
Wow. So many people get their start in Buffy.
Ratings and final thoughts. I personally, like I said, I'm with Joss Whedon. This is not that good of a movie. This, I think, should have been left with him. But with a lot of the points that you brought up early on, I am actually going up from a 2 out of 5 to a 3.
Now I don't have to stake you.
Oh, thank God. It's not good.
Yes,
but,
it is. So good.
But that said, It is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're in a film class and you wanted to study like 90s cinema, this is just about the only film you need to watch. This is almost the equivalent of a Bond film in that you could think of a particular era of filmmaking and that would have an analog Bond film to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think of when Star Wars was popular, you have Moonraker. Blaxploitation would have been, I believe, Live and Let Die, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, this isn't a great movie, but it's a great time capsule.
That's very true.
If you're a fan of the show, no matter what Whedon tells you, I would say watch it. As much as, no, it's not canon, but at the same time, you can still see where a lot of Joss's like early ideas from the show came from.
There are some callbacks in Buffy to some of the things
yeah.
you miss. You know, Buffy's white dress and the leather jacket, fighting vampires at a dance, and things like that. Pike, Spike.
I don't think that was specifically a callback, or if it was, it wasn't a planned one.
No, but it made me think.
But yeah, no, that's fair. But like where they do mention her burning down the gym at her previous school and so forth. So like Whedon does still pull from his original vision for this movie for the show. I'm going 3 out of 5. Like there's, it's good, it's not great. A lot of the dialogue doesn't hold up, but
it's not well written.
It is a fascinating 90s film.
I'll give it 3 out of 5 Mean Girls, 3 out of 5 Clueless, and 2 out of 5 Crybaby because it wasn't a musical. then I would give it overall 5 out of 5 for 90s fashion, and that's all that matters to me right now in my heart after I watch that movie. Also flamethrowers. 5 out of 5 for use of flamethrowers. And remember, I was good and didn't stake Mike.
Thank you, Hef, both for coming on and the fact that you've probably just created 90% of our blooper reel. Until our next flashback, just remember that if you're tired of what's in the theater, the library and the store bargain bin are your friends.
Don't forget to hit those like and subscribe buttons, share this video with your friends, and drop us a line anytime you like.